Let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our vantage point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
And welcome back to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us for episode number 52 on this Monday, Columbus Day, October 9th, 2017. I am Joe Murata, alongside the one and only Michael Quinn. How you doing there, Michael?
Howdy doody.
How you doing, sir?
Good.
Ready to talk about the world of retro wrestling?
I am always ready to talk about old wrestling.
The world of it, if you will.
The world.
The wacky world.
The world wrestling retro.
That's right. That's what we do here, folks. And we thank you for joining us each and every week. Before we get to anything, Quinn, we have a few points to make, as always.
Uh-huh.
If you haven't followed us yet, we have a Twitter. Did you know that?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And you can follow us. Our handle is at OVP Podcast. So you go there, follow us, tweet at us. We'll tweet back. We'll follow back. We're not a bot, Quinn.
Yes. Mashugana.
Mishlava from
we
Russia.
We have a handle.
We do have a handle on things.
Yeah.
If you will. You can also email us if you like the long form email communication. You can do that by going to your email and typing in ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, a few other things. We have a Facebook group.
Yes, we have the Facebook group. You can join it by searching our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast over on Facebook. Click the join button on the group,
yep.
And then we will approve you. We approve pretty much anyone.
What goes on there?
Hijinks, generally. You know, people talking about old wrestling like we do on this show, but with each other.
It's really fun, actually.
Yeah, it is fun.
If you haven't joined yet, I highly suggest checking it out. If you don't like it, then don't. It's fine.
Yeah, you don't have to.
Another thing you don't have to do, but we'd appreciate it, is check us out on iTunes. It's one of the places we are. Our Apple Podcasts, Quinn.
Yes, Apple Podcasts. It's where you get most of your podcasts. It's probably the number one leading provider in podcast entertainment. You go over there, you hit subscribe,
yeah.
And you can also leave a review.
Yes, what kind of review?
Five-star review, hopefully.
Yes.
Even if you don't like it, leave a five-star review.
Yeah, sure, why not?
And also, we have that contest going on with those reviews, so if you have a friend leave a review and mention your name in it,
yep,
it counts towards 1 point.
Yes.
And the most wins at the end, and you get a prize.
That's right. We are doing the OVP Recommend a Friend campaign, folks.
Mm-hmm.
They say, okay, Gary Fay recommended me or whatever.
Right.
For example, Mick Price.
Right.
AJ Smith, whoever. These
Correct.
Are some of our fans. They're real people. And then whoever has the most referrals
yes.
wins not only an OVT.
Right.
Available on teespring.com/OVP podcast. You win a guest appearance on one of our future episodes.
Yes, a big, big prize.
Very big. So big.
Yes.
Huge, tremendous.
Now,
yes.
There's also other places you can get us, but you can't leave reviews there, like Google Play Music.
Yes, that's true. You can. Yeah.
Stitcher.
Yep.
Blueberry.
Who cares?
Yeah, like that crap.
That crap.
So you can go find us there, too.
And various other places, I would say.
Yes.
One of which, of course, is the place to be, Nation. That is, I am... been informed, the only place to be, Quinn, in your pop culture
that's,
world.
That's
just
it.
Go there. Just don't go anywhere else.
Don't go anywhere else on the internet.
Only go there.
Yeah.
And if you go there, you'll see some stuff. And one of the things that's really good on there is a podcast called GF Allentown. Greetings from Allentown.
Yes, on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, I believe.
That is correct. It's a Pro Wrestling Only feed. And it's our friend, the little brother of the show, Petey Winston.
The incomparable Petey Wilson, Winston.
Good enough.
Yeah.
And he does a one-man show because there's just not two of him.
Yes.
So he only does one.
One day he'll just clone himself and
yeah.
then he can do the show with himself.
Exactly. It'll be great. But for now, it's a one-man show and it's a great wrestling program where he reviews old wrestling, but in a different style than we do.
Yes.
Because we can't all have a partner like Michael Quinn over here.
Well, you're welcome.
All right. Well, Michael Quinn, as we start the show.
Yes.
We have a foundational series going on for season 6.
Yes.
It is a foundational series for the modern era, we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we last left off, we were talking about how Bobby Backlund was still the world champion.
Oh, yeah, ham.
yeah, yeah, him.
You know, it was like we united together in there.
But Vince Jr., who had purchased the company in 1982 from his dad.
Oh, yeah, ham.
Was definitely looking for something new. And how ironic it would be if that person had been someone that maybe his dad already knew.
Uh-huh.
But before we get to any of that, Quinn, Bob Backlund fought the Iron Sheik in Madison Square Garden on December 26, 1983.
Yes.
Backlund was the defending world champion.
The World Wrestling Federation heavyweight champion, Bob Backlund!
I would like you to explain real quick the Iron Sheik just as a thing during this period of
time. Basically, he was the evil foreigner character of the day.
From Tehran, Iran, weighing 258 pounds, the Iron Sheik.
Also, Iran, since around 1977, I believe, since the Iranian Revolution,
yep,
had been a hater of the United States. Yep. I believe they still are.
Belligerent.
Belligerent, not as belligerent.
No, not as bad, no.
This was the height of it. And, you know, America had just come off the gas shortage because of Iran. And
there was a hostage crisis
so
earlier in the
80s. So people didn't like Iran. So the Iron Sheik, you know, was an Iranian and
yep,
he came
former
out.
Olympic athlete.
Iran number one, like, you know, all that stuff. And
USA Haktoy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, you probably know the Iron Sheik now as the guy that says fuck all the time on Twitter.
Basically,
and
he doesn't
YouTube.
Like Brian Blair.
Brian Blair, you are another faggot son of a bitch. No good lowlife.
He that really guy. Doesn't like Brian Blair.
He thinks he's like the Michael Jackson.
But there was a time before he was such a big joke, and 1983 was that time.
Yes.
Because the all-American boy here, Bobby Backlund, you know, Mr. G. Golly, you yeah. know, from Minnesota, yeah. it's late 83 now.
No we one cares.
Certainly not Vincent yeah. K. McMahon, you know?
Yeah.
We are on the cusp of something new. But the best part of this whole thing, I have to say, Quinn, is the Iron Sheik's manager.
Yes, classy Freddie Blassie.
And what did he go by under this
Ayatollah Blassie.
I just love that.
Yeah, it is good.
Here is the Ayatollah Blassie.
I mean, that's a playoff if you don't know from the era, is the Ayatollah Khomeini was the big, people didn't like him from Iran. Like, he was the leader of Iran.
That's right. See, here on OVP, you get a slice of history as well.
Yes.
So as we head towards this match here, Backlund's the reigning champion. It's Madison Square Garden for their usual monthly show.
Right.
The day after Christmas, in this case, 1983. Mm-hmm. And what a Christmas gift here for the Iron Sheik.
Yeah.
Because these two go at it. Apparently, the Sheik had injured, you know, in kayfabe, Backlund's neck
right.
prior to the match.
Oh, no! A Sheik attacking Backlund from behind! The Iron Sheik! Oh, that kick to the back of the neck! Oh, I can't!
Sheik gets his finisher, the camel clutch, on Bobby Backlund.
Right.
Backlund doesn't give up, Quinn. What happens is Arnold Skolin, the useless manager of Bob Backlund.
One of the shareholders we talked about last month.
That very good
week.
Point.
Yeah.
Very good point. He throws in the towel.
Yes.
And Backlund loses the world championship to the Iron Sheik.
He's sitting right on that lower back.
Is he ever pulling on it?
Pull on it!
And Backlund's got a bad neck.
Pull on it! Oh, pull out! Backlund did not submit. Arnold Skolin threw something into the ring.
So heading into 1984 now, we have a new world champion for the first time in a long time.
Right.
Since Backlund won the title from superstar Billy Graham.
Correct.
In 1977, I believe.
Yes.
But let's backtrack a little bit, Michael Quinn. In mm-hmm. the summer of 1983, the NWA, National Wrestling Alliance, as
correct.
We've talked about last week, held their annual convention. You know, the men and the suits with the mahogany.
And the cigars and all that crap.
Probably drinking brown liquor.
Yeah. The one where, like, Gorilla was there in, like, 1948, but it's, like, still it's like that picture in The Shining, you know, when they, like, you notice, like, Jack Nicholson was
right,
there all
he was
along.
There all
yeah. It's like, that's the NWA convention.
Well, at this 1983 edition, which, by the way, what the hell did they do with these things? Just get drunk, you think?
It's probably get drunk, get hookers,
right.
something like that.
What would they really be doing?
And saying, like, don't fuck with my territory.
Yeah, because not
like, everyone's like giving their yearly
yeah.
warnings. Like, don't you fucking come over here.
Right, because no one liked each other. These are old-timey wrestling promoters. Your Wally Carbos and your Don Owens.
God,
and your
Wally Carbo.
And your Sam Muchnick.
Now, like, Wally Carbo, though, he was AWA.
Oh, you know what? Good point.
Yeah.
I didn't. Thank you very much, Quinn, having to correct me
well,
there.
That's from the AWA DVD. That's the only reason I know who the hell Wally Carbo is. He's like, I couldn't believe they were interviewing that guy. I was like, he's alive.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
possibly if Stanley Blackburn can find some other drastic measures to get CD's rest to stay in line, he'll come up with it.
So basically, Vince McMahon storms in.
Yeah.
At this convention in 83, he officially withdraws from the NWA.
Yes, Vince McMahon Jr.
Jr., yes. He's running things in his own company by this point. WWF officially out of the NWA.
How do you envision that went? Vince McMahon got on the podium and was like, fuck you all, yeah. You're fired.
No chance in hell, Blade, right?
It's like, and then he stormed off.
I'm out of here and you're fired.
Yeah.
And basically, Vince McMahon Jr.'s whole thing here was, I'm going to take my company national. Screw the NWA.
Yeah.
This conglomerate of old, staunchy, cigar-y, you know, promoters.
Well, also, his territory was probably making a lot more money than the rest of them. Let's be honest here.
Perhaps, maybe besides the Crockett's.
From the New York?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But during 1983, the Crockett's were doing very well.
Right. I'm not saying, like, Vince was making the most, but enough to be like, he didn't need this shit anymore.
To have a serious shot at this.
Yeah.
But the Crockett's were about to put on something in November.
Yes.
The very first Starrcade and Quinn.
Yeah, something that's coming back soon, by the way.
It is. And before there was ever a WrestleMania, Michael, there was Starrcade.
Yes. The first, was it on pay-per-view, the first one?
I don't know. I know it was on closed circuit, though.
Okay. Well, whatever.
It was a supercard.
Big supercard event thing.
And the main event there was the world champion, like we mentioned last week, Harley Race.
Harley Race.
The NWA world champion. Yeah. Facing Ric Flair.
In a cage.
The face of the 80s NWA, right?
Right. And this was hyped to be Flair's big comeback after losing the title for the first time. Like, if Flair won, he would be established. He would be the man.
And he did win.
Here's Flair up on the top rope.
One, he's got him down. One, two, three. He did it.
And he was now the NWA World Champion going into 1984. However, Vince McMahon had a little something up his sleeve. You see, back in 1979, a young kid from Florida, Terry Jean Bollea.
Yeah, Venice Beach. a troubled youth with the Macho Man.
On Mixed Beach there. Yeah. He came to the WWF as the Incredible Hulk Hogan, Quinn.
Yes.
Hailing from Venice Beach, California, weighing 320 pounds, the Incredible Hulk Hogan.
He was something of an enigma for the time, although Billy Graham was there first doing the blonde muscle gimmick.
Yeah, but Hulk was like bigger, I think.
He was actually bigger. Yes. And Hulk Hogan was part of Vince McMahon Sr.'s WWF in 1979, 1980, and famously had a feud with Andre the Giant that wound up at Shea Stadium in 1980, Quinn.
Right.
This is a shining moment of glory, Hulk Hogan, I can tell you that.
You give me that a favor all the time. Can I ask you one favor?
Yes.
Why are we not going to ring right now?
Well, I'll tell you.
I don't want to, like, overhype it. It wasn't, like, the main event.
No,
like,
it was
people
not.
People were there to see Bruno beat the crap out of Larry Zbyszko, which I would pay to see Larry Zbyszko get the crap beat out of him, too. But
any year.
Yeah.
By anyone.
Yeah.
But in terms of Hogan Andre, this established Hulk Hogan for that period of time. All right, this is a newcomer on the scene.
Right.
This guy's new and exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Andre was a beloved and established figure, and they had a nice feud in 1980.
Yeah, he was new, exciting. He wore a cape. he had classy Freddie Blassie to take his career right down the toilet.
And that he did in kayfabe anyway, because Vince McMahon Sr., you know, we mentioned old-time promoters.
Right.
He didn't like the idea of Hulk Hogan signing on to do a little movie called Rocky III.
Which is insane to me, because wouldn't you take any opportunity to get, like, outside popularity or anything?
Different mentality, I guess, right, Quinn? Because back then, that was kind of like a no-no. Vince Sr. was like, no, you're gone.
Yeah.
And that was it.
If you leave now, you're out.
And Hogan was gone.
Thunderlips is here. In the flesh, baby.
However, he cropped up a little bit later in Vern Gagne's American Wrestling Association.
Yes, with Wally Carbo.
With Wally Carbo.
Yeah.
And you're not going to let that go, are you? And Hulk Hogan became a huge star for Vern Gagne there. I mean, really helped him out.
But I mean, that didn't work out either.
Problem was, as much as the fans wanted Hulk Hogan to be the world champion.
Yes, it was probably the most over thing that happened.
Oh my gosh,
in
Vern
a long
stepped
time.
In shit there.
Yeah.
From Venice Beach, California!
Vern wanted to split or take a huge cut of Hogan's merchandising.
I mean, I've heard 70%, 80%, some ridiculous number. Like, he wanted pretty much all of Hulk's proceeds, and he didn't want to give any of it to Hulk, the guy actually who made his promotion exciting.
Right. So after finally holding out, he does agree to make him champion, but with that caveat,
right.
Hogan says no. Hulk Hogan winds up leaving the AWA at the end of 1983, but he storms back into the WWF. A little known fact, Quinn, and I don't even know if you knew this. The day or two after this Backlund title loss, Hogan made one house show appearance still as a heel. And still
with
Blassie. Yes, just to reestablish him.
Oh, okay, so the continuity that Blassie was still with him and crap like that.
Yes, but early January 1984, Hogan returns and saves Bob Backlund from the Wild Samoans.
Yes, a very famous episode of Championship Wrestling.
Yep.
Hulk Hogan makes the big save, and the crowd in this tiny Allentown is the loudest I've ever heard it in Allentown, ever. Like, period.
It's
never
insane.
Was that loud ever.
Oh! You gotta be kidding!
Pounds of muscle in there right now.
And basically what we have here is Backlund begrudgingly in real life, and I guess even in a kayfabe sense, passes the torch to Hogan because Backlund is still selling injuries.
Right. Backlund was initially supposed to have his big rematch with the Iron Sheik, but they had an injury angle going where there was like the week
the
before they were
clutch.
Like, the doctors have to approve it, and then you find out the next week, and it's this big sad speech from Bob Backlund that he's not going to be able to rematch him, but his friend or his friend
he endorses Hulk Hogan basically.
Everybody knows the Hulk. He's changed his ways. He's a great man. He's told me he's not gonna have Blassie around. I'm gonna give him my hand and give him good luck.
All right, Bob, you know something? I would like to thank Mr. Bob Backlund in the WWF for bringing the Hulkster back.
Now, that fateful day of January 23rd, 1984, Quinn, Hulkamania is born. Now, we've talked about this before, but a quick recap. It's like a five-minute match, and they did it perfectly.
The Iron Sheik gets a boner.
He does.
Yeah.
And they knew exactly what they were doing. And for all the hype, and I know everyone likes to say how, you know, in the South, Southern Territories, all this money was made, Freebirds this, Ric Flair that. Fine, have that, take it, love it, enjoy it. This is a huge moment for the World Wrestling Federation.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, they would go on to play this pieces of this match on everything they did for, like, years.
This is the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, Quinn.
Yeah, this is the big moment.
This is it.
This is the, like, this is the WWF as we know it coming of age.
Yep. It's Hulk Hogan powering out, I should say, of the Camel Clutch, the one that defeated Backlund.
Right.
Leg dropping the Sheik.
Right.
Winning the world title. Mm-hmm. Madison Square Garden goes nuts.
Hulk Hogan, he drops a big leg on him. He's down for the cover of the leg. One, two, he got him.
Now, wrestling immediately doesn't take off, Quinn, but what this leads to, you want to give a little, as we go from 84 and we hop to 85, 86, what happens in the World Wrestling Federation? What happens with wrestling here?
So, there's a couple of key things here. The talent that comes in, a lot of it is from the AWA,
Correct.
Where Hogan was.
Yes.
If you watch the AWA a year before Hogan came, it's basically the WWF.
Jesse Ventura, Bobby Heenan, Ken Patera.
Right.
Gene Okerlund.
Is Roddy Piper there?
NWA.
No. He's an NWA.
Yeah,
Greg Valentine comes back
Rick
from
Martel.
NWA. Yeah,
yeah, Rick Martel.
So, yeah, basically anybody that's anybody says, oh, there's shit going on over here. Let's go here.
And Vince does that for about the next 3 years.
Right.
And we'll obviously cover more of that. But as far as the mainstream popularity, Quinn, it exploded in a way that it hadn't since those Gorgeous George days that we mentioned.
Right, and a couple things happened to establish that. Famously, Captain Lou Albano meets Cindy Lauper and her manager,
David
Wolf, or whatever
David
his name,
Wolf,
Mr.
Yes.
Wolf there, or Wolf.
Big Bad Wolf.
Yeah, meets Big Bad Wolf on a plane, and all of a sudden, now celebrities are showing up left and right on the program.
Yes, and including the war to settle the score, the brawl to settle it all, or whatever it was called.
They get a spot on
MTV, which was the hotness of the 1980s.
Right, exactly. So not only do you got the celebrities, the musicians, that kind of thing.
Right.
Things are coming together.
Yep.
It's not WrestleMania yet, but celebrities are showing up. There's specials.
Yep.
They start to get offers from NBC to bring wrestling back to national prime
network television.
Network television, yeah.
So what happens, basically, we all know WrestleMania. Not the first pay-per-view, no. Not the first supercard, no. And it was held at MSG the way all of their house shows were.
WrestleMania 1 looks like just the April MSG house show. It really does. The way it's done.
The way it would have been done. Yes.
Yeah.
However,
it just says WrestleMania on it. That's basically it.
You've got Muhammad Ali there.
Right.
You've got Billy Martin there. You've got Liberace there. Cyndi Lauper. And all this stuff. And what this leads to is Dick Ebersol and Vince McMahon striking up a partnership
right.
that led to Saturday night's main event. Every few months, a few times a year,
mm-hmm.
WWF would take Saturday Night Live's time slot.
Right. Saturday Night Live would go on break, and it still does to this day.
Yes.
But they decided, hey, wrestling's really popular right now, and we want to keep the ratings up, so right. let's put WWF on that.
Saturday Night Main Event, welcome to the Thunderdome in beautiful Tampa, Florida. And this is going to be a fabulous World Wrestling Federation event.
And man, what that did for Vince McMahon in terms of national exposure,
mm-hmm.
what that did in terms of television production, because Ebersol worked with him to really
right.
make this product larger than life. And this is the Hulkamania era we're focusing on
right.
here, this segment. Now, we can't get into too much detail, but in broad strokes, Quinn, what this era, about 84 towards the end of the 80s, encapsulates, and
yeah.
what happened here is huge television production improvements.
Oh, my goodness. It looks like a real show. It's lit. Like bright, super bright. The characters are large. Like every character is larger than life.
Everything is larger than life. It truly is a human cartoon at this point as the
right.
80s roll forward.
And it's so popular.
So popular.
Everyone knows what the WWF is. The WWF is wrestling.
Exactly. Hulk Hogan, a cultural icon by the
right.
end of the 80s. The merchandising through the roof, things you could have never imagined. Yeah, like, we all get that there's t-shirts. Of course, any promotion can
this
have those.
This is bigger than t-shirts.
A cartoon show?
Yes.
Hulk Hogan had a cartoon series?
Yeah, Rockin' Wrestling.
And who's the number one crook? We're gonna run out of town.
Phelps!
You got it, Daddy.
Action figures?
Mm-hmm.
Wrestling superstars and new wrestling ring, each sold separately from LJN.
Bed sheets?
Yeah, I mean, you name it, like the Hulk Hogan like workout set, like even the little stuff like
right.
that. You know, cups, ice cream bars, like,
frisbees?
Yeah.
Like, bandanas?
Right, this is not, wrestling was never like this.
No.
This is something else, and every kid knew what wrestling was, every parent knew what wrestling was.
Yep.
Single people, women, children,
the
men,
old folks.
It didn't matter who you were. Wrestling was a thing you watched.
And even in passing, even if you didn't care, Meltzer was doing his thing out in California since the early 80s, late 70s. A match, you know, five-star match
yeah.
and all this crap. The casual guy just knew that's Hulk Hogan and I want to see him punch that guy.
Right,
that's
exactly.
all they cared about. Their crappy kid wanted the ice cream bar. You bought it for him, but
yeah.
you knew who Hulk Hogan was. And that is the Hulkamania era.
All of this snowballs and it grows.
Yes, it
to
does.
To a point when we were looking for the big match that would kind of encapsulate the era, and it all comes up around the time of WrestleMania 3. Now, 3 years into this, like, kind of fast forward a little bit.
Exactly. So we've got Hogan-Andre, the biggest match to that point, one of the, if not the biggest matches in WWF.
The biggest program, if you will.
History, yes.
Because what I mean by program, meaning like the Andre match, not only brought them the biggest live crowd they would ever see, you know, 93,000, whatever.
Whatever the figure is
whatever,
here.
Still, it was the biggest live crowd wrestling ever had.
Absolutely.
Not only that, a couple months later, they do it on national television in that slot that Ebersol provided for them.
Yes.
And it was the highest rated wrestling TV show ever.
Ever. And that, of course, being February 1988's main event. This
right.
is now primetime. So we had the SNL slot.
Yeah.
Now Ebersol gives them this 1 hour primetime, Friday night, 8 o'clock.
Yes.
Wrestling?
Yeah.
Are
Andre,
you kidding
Hogan.
Me? And the numbers that did. TV wise was insane for that, unfathomable now.
Yeah,
that,
what that, is it, like a 15, 11?
Something like that.
Something weird.
Whatever it is, this little thing from that we talked about just a couple of years earlier, the Vince McMahon promotion that he bought from his dad.
Yeah.
It's amazing the vision that Vince McMahon had.
Yes.
Now, are we saying he had the most, you know, scrupulous business practices? No.
No.
Did he do everything morally right? No, everyone, but no promoter did.
And it wasn't a smooth road for Vince.
No.
There was a lot of confrontation in between, and we don't have time to really.
It'll be later in
go
the,
into
yes.
all of it today, but
later in the series
the
we will get
is,
into that.
A lot of work went into this.
A lot of backstabbing,
and by you know, by 1987, 1988, Vince has hit the peak.
This is unthinkable only
yeah.
5 years earlier.
And the NWA is nowhere close to this.
The NWA is nowhere close to this, but around this time in 1988, something very important is going to happen. Stay tuned next week. In the meantime, we will be back right after this.
Hey, B, no way a little dude like you is gonna change my ways.
It's time you were tempted with a taste of nuts and honey.
Hulk Hogan doesn't eat nuts and honey.
Take this, an unbeatable part of this nutritious breakfast.
That's better than a body slam.
Undefeated.
And still champion.
It's a honey of the nut. It's Honey Nut Cheerios.
Marley Race to Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair to The Rock, Sting to Steve Austin. You're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us for episode number 52 here on Columbus Day, October 9th, 2017. Michael Quinn.
Yes.
It is now time for Mount Rushmore and Death Valley, where each week we have and still will continue to put four of the best of something onto Mount Rushmore, and four of the worst will go down into the desert of Death Valley. Quinn, we've got some fan requests pouring in, and we're going to do one today.
Yes, this came from two people.
Like, overwhelming, you know, majority here, so we're obviously going to do this one. And I suppose I'll introduce it?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so this is from AJ Smith and Colin Middleton, and they wanted us to do the Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of ring attire.
Yes, ring attire.
So that'll be interesting. Now, we just want to put something out there. For this season, folks, Quinn and I know these topics ahead of time. We're not surprising each other.
Yeah, not this time.
Not this time, because we're picking fan suggestions together.
Right. And, it's time for a bit of a change with it anyway.
Yeah.
I think the segment's grown to that point.
Yes. Yeah. Quinn and I need to make sure we can do these so we do confer with each other. But anyway, AJ Smith and Colin Middleton both wanted us to talk about ring attire. Quinn, what do you think makes good or bad ring attire?
I think good and bad ring attire, either it stands out as, like, that's awesome, or it stands out as this is horrible. Like, it's just a standout kind of thing.
Right.
It's like, that's what ring attire is. It's supposed to make the wrestler seem unique.
Sure.
You know? And maybe, like, I think most ring attire makes the wrestler seem unique, so it's not a matter of, like, who's the most unique, but it's a matter of, like, how is it done in the best way or worst way?
Okay. Now, do we count stuff that they wear to the ring too, you think?
Yeah, we can count what they come to the ring with or what they wrestle with.
Okay, fair enough. Or the overall look of both. Okay. You want to start?
Yeah, I'll start.
Okay. Remember, we're not allowed to say pick stick anymore. Someone yelled at us on Facebook
for
that.
No pick stick.
Quinn, I have the choice. You have the voice.
Okay. I'm going to pick number one, Ravishing Rick Rude.
Okay. Ravishing Rick Rude came to the ring typically with a robe on.
Yes.
Like a glittery, sparkly robe.
And the robe is nice, but it's more about his actual tights.
The airbrush tights that usually had something to do with either his current feud or a belt that he wanted.
Yes.
Or, you know, there was other times that maybe there was a lady on there in a very suggestive area.
I mean, his tights were part of storyline. Like,
it's
the whole
weird,
Cheryl Roberts
true.
on his pelvis thing.
Yes.
There was one time when he also put a Kathy Lee Gifford on his pelvis when he was on Regis and Kathy Lee.
In 89 or 90,
yes,
right?
Yes, and there's a funny gif of him, like, exposing it and, like, her, like, just, like, walking off set, like, all appalled.
Right.
Right here.
Go ahead.
No!
This one is for the Gifford.
You know what? His tights were good, and the fact that they were long tights, I think that worked for him.
Yes.
No shirt, long tights,
and
good look,
you
right?
know, it exposed his physique, which was one of his big attributes, too.
His
it
selling
it
points,
overall
yeah.
worked. The other thing I liked, like you said, with the belt thing.
Yep.
I loved how he incorporated the Intercontinental title onto his belt.
Yep.
Or onto his waist, really.
Yep.
And it made it like when he was the Intercontinental Champion, when he took his belt off, he was always the Intercontinental Champion,
exactly.
that kind of thing. And then even, like, I think, did he at one point put the WWF belt on there when he was facing Warrior?
I think he did in 1990,
Yeah, so that was always a cool thing with Ravishing Rick Rude. I just thought he, like, stands out to me as a guy ring attire-wise.
Fair enough, I'm going to volley to you.
Go ahead.
Macho Man Randy Savage.
Which one?
Fair question. 85 to 90, like the 85 to 89.
The classic Macho Man, like the robes.
Yes, short trunks.
Short trunks.
Multicolored, different colors each time.
I thought his robes were actually pretty cool because early on he had a more, there was like an Asian flair to some of his robes.
With the sticks.
those are really cool.
Yeah, the cape stick
like
robes.
Dragons on them and stuff.
Yes, you're
like,
right.
That was cool.
No, you're right. I think Savage's ring attire from 85, and I know he was the Macho Man before that, but
yeah.
WWF, okay? From 85 to 89, before he switched to the long tights and then eventually the shirt and all that,
yeah.
His 80s attire is probably some of the best. That might make
classic
Mount Rushmore.
The yellow boots,
yes.
And yellow...
the orange tights.
The yellow knee pads.
Yeah, and the orange trunks or the red trunks.
Yeah.
Classic.
With the stars on him, Macho Man.
That version.
What was cool about his attire is Elizabeth would match him in certain occasions.
Yes, like WrestleMania 4, for example,
Matched. That's the most prominent one. But a lot of times she would just match him. Uh-huh. And I think that was almost part of his attire was what Liz was wearing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she complimented him.
Right. And that was just a cool aspect of the Macho Man. And also the goggles.
Yes, the Randy Savage goggles that were like the ski goggles, essentially.
They were awesome.
They were.
Yeah, and with the bandana over it, he just looked cool.
He did. I agree with you.
In the Tower of Power, too sweet to be sour, I'm funky like a monkey. Sky's the limit and space is the place.
Anyone else we want to start considering here? I don't know if we have a first one yet. What
I don't
do you
know.
Think?
I really think Rude is like...
Rude? I don't know. I would have thought of Rude.
Really?
Really.
Huh.
I would have thought of Hogan.
Yeah, Hogan.
Hogan's ring attire is iconic because him ripping part of it off is his whole appeal.
I think it's iconic, but I almost think it's too basic because if we're talking ring attire, right?
Yeah.
We want like the most standout, the ones that are the most... I guess Hogan's is memorable, but...
It is very memorable, Michael.
Right, but does it stand out? Like I said, Rick Rude, like where it's like you think of the ring attire. Like Hogan, I just think of... The yellow, orange goblin.
Yeah, but you
though.
Think yellow and red. Yeah. Yellow and red is symbolic of Hogan.
I actually personally think that the NWO attire is cooler.
Oh, come on. Hogan with pants.
Yeah, but that whole
no.
thing is awesome. Like, because he didn't wear the pants before and he's heel.
So he puts on a pair of pants, now he's a heel.
No. But not only that, the airbrushed boots were cool.
Those were cool.
And that whole airbrush design he was rocking was actually kind of awesome. Like the t-shirt that was cut off on the sides, like it made him look more muscular. Like I don't know. And the black gloves.
True.
Like he looked awesome.
I'll tell you what though, you know what really stands out for its period of time in WWF?
What?
Steve Austin.
Yes.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
That one's different from all of them because it's cool because it's basic.
All black.
All black. There's nobody, like, only jobbers wore that,
right.
But he wasn't a jobber. That was what was so interesting about him. And the idea that he didn't give a crap,
yep.
Only built into it. And also, he kind of had alternate ring attire because a lot of times we saw Austin, he was in his cutoff shorts.
Yes, that's
with
true.
With the Austin 316 shirt and
yep.
those boots.
Yep, you're right.
He remarked on those boots on a recent podcast. I forget. Somebody gave him an endorsement once and he turned it down because a business manager told him not to do it.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Wow.
The boots that he iconically would stomp a mud hole
yeah,
into
yeah.
everyone. He could have been, they were called High Tech Boots. That was the company that made them.
Wow.
He could have been the official sponsor and some doofus told him not to do it.
That's stupid.
Yeah, and he didn't know business yet, so he was like, he just believed him.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that doesn't
sucks.
That suck?
Yeah.
It sucks!
I'd say he's up there. He has iconic ring gear.
Yes, he does.
Even though it's very, very basic.
Oh, yeah.
And the vest, too, that he wore down the
vest,
ring.
The Austin 316 vest.
What do you think? Is he a good number one?
I don't know. What about this?
Yeah.
Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
Well, I mean, he wore Steve Allen's wife's underpants.
Right. But I don't know. There's something iconic about he was the only guy wearing leopard print. And like that was
during that period of time.
It fit
yeah.
the whole Fiji Island thing.
I don't know. How is Fiji and leopard like synonymous?
He just looks like Tarzan.
He's not, though.
He isn't, but
I'm not putting that on Mount Rushmore.
And he's barefoot. That's another aspect. I mean, I consider that all part of the attire, because you can choose to wear boots or not.
I guess you can, yes.
I mean, we're talking about ring attire here.
I know. I think for number one here, I've either got to go Hulk Hogan, yellow and red, Randy Savage, or Steve Austin. All iconic.
Sorry, I got one more.
Go ahead.
What about Roddy Piper? The kilt, the hot rod shirt.
Yeah, but his in-ring gear is horrible. He just like the crappy blue trunks.
It was fine. I don't know.
It wasn't fine. It was okay.
Yeah, but you said that it counts what
it
they
counts.
Come to the ring.
The kilt was very unique.
The kilt was unique. The hot rod shirt is iconic.
What about Superstar Graham?
Superstar Billy Graham. Oh, yeah.
Because he was the first, before Hogan did the boas and the weightlifting pants and belt,
yeah.
And before Scott Steiner did it as Big Papa Pump,
yep.
And before Jesse Ventura did it.
Yeah, I would say Billy Graham would definitely need to be,
that, put
that
him
would
on the
actually
map.
Number one, because that guy was like a pioneer with ring attire. The earrings,
yes.
The bandanas, the tie-dye shirts.
Yes, and you know who else was too, and might also make it, in all seriousness, Gorgeous George.
Maybe.
Because he was the first flamboyant wrestler.
What, are we going to put Farmer Burns on this too?
I don't think so, but Gorgeous George, in all seriousness, came to the ring with like bouffants and just dresses sometimes.
Right. But,
very different from anything that had ever happened.
I mean, it inspired a Ric Flair. I also say it inspired the Adrian Adonis character.
To an extent, perhaps,
yeah,
yes.
The idea of the effeminate male.
Adrian Street, probably, as well.
Yes.
In all seriousness.
The boas.
Can we safely put Billy Graham on, though, for number one?
I think we could safely put Graham in.
Okay, so for number one, superstar Billy Graham. Wow, that took a turn, though, back to the past, huh?
Yeah.
But I think that's fair. This is a situation where that's fair. Yes, go ahead.
What about the Ultimate Warrior? Now, that is a complete look.
You're right. That is a very good look. Now, not 1992 bodysuit muscles, right?
No. I'm talking about the duster.
The tassels,
the stuff on his trunks. Like, I love his attire at 7, where the belt's on the back, and it says, this
duster
means more than this. Like,
means much more than this,
There was all this imagery with it, and like messages, like almost inspirational stuff. I also liked when he would have the body paint on his chest.
True.
And that was cool.
And the face paint counts as part of the ring attire.
Right.
Ultimate Warrior as a complete look. Now, I'm not a big fan of his.
But the look is what got him over.
Is huge.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's a big one.
The tassels. Who would have thought tassels?
Well, because it made his physique stand out.
Right. Kerry Von Erich had the tassels, too.
He did, but he only had it around the legs, the feet, which...
He came up a foot short a little bit. Ultimate Warrior, though? Yeah, that's a good... But okay, let's start to narrow down here.
Right.
Warrior or Randy Savage?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think they're on the same level, to be honest with you.
Either of them or Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Stone Cold for his uniqueness, to be the basic bald-headed.
You could always count on him wearing that.
Right, and it was reliable, and it was just a look for the time. It would never really work anymore.
I don't know if the Warriors would either.
I don't know. I could see somebody trying it.
The Young Bucks, as they rip off everything.
Yeah, because it stands out. The Ultimate Warrior, he knew, he was building like a brand, like unlike a lot of guys. Like, you know that, too, because he wanted the Warrior comics. And his physique was part of his attire. Like, he was shredded. He was greasy. Like, like the whole idea that he was this modern-day warrior, like Kerry
Von Erich. Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, today's Tom Sawyer.
Exit the Warrior, today's Tom Sawyer.
He was like a space warrior or something. What about Ric Flair,
I was just going to say, let's hold the phone here.
Yeah.
What about the Nature Boy Ric Flair? Now, I know he wasn't the first guy to ever wear robes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you need to be the first to be the best.
Here's the thing with Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Not only does he have the robes that exude this confidence, this flamboyancy, that thing that he's rich thing, right?
Yes.
But he played all the suits into his attire, and he would talk about it, and he would say, my shoes are worth more than your house.
My shoes cost more than your house.
He would come out every week and be like, I got a gold watch. It's worth $25,000.
Yeah.
You know, my suit is tailor-made head to toe.
Yep.
The sunglasses he would wear. Like, everything about Ric Flair's attire was his character, and Ric Flair would come out and brag about it. He's one of the only guys who would brag about his attire.
You're absolutely right. That played into it perfectly. And his robes are iconic.
Yeah.
I mean, so many different robes, from the pink to the black to the green, the light blue, the purple. And his in-ring gear would always match whatever color the robe was.
Yeah.
And very basic, but it fit him perfectly. Trunks, boots, knee pads.
Well, his ring gear was cool, too, because when you're a rich guy character, right?
Mm-hmm.
You should be playing up the classiness. So he had the RF in script on the
corner. Yes, he did, the script.
Like, and that would play into the fact that when he was off days, he'd, you know, wear polo shirts and khakis. And,
yeah, it's very right.
Yeah, like, he's just classy.
Do we put him on, though?
I don't know. I think he would have to be in there.
I don't know that I ever looked at Ric Flair and went, wow, he looks cool.
I think he looks cool. I love the idea of a guy that makes the preppy look cool.
I guess so.
Like, he was like an icon as far as like people in the crowd were dressing like him.
I don't know, though, Quinn. I mean, Greg Valentine wore the same shit.
Yeah, but in his off days, he just looked like crap. When he was like doing interviews, he looked like shit. He'd wear like Andre suits.
What about Bret Hart?
Bret Hart's another great one.
The jacket?
I love the idea of the Hitman, but he looks like a cooler version of it, like a boisterous, like the whole military getup because he's
epaulets,
a hitman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like that's an awesome look. I always liked his boots too.
Yeah, great boots.
You know, those were like, if you really think about it, they're like World War One military style, like that white with the black on the bottom part.
I wouldn't have ever thought of that, but that's a good point.
It's all a military look. The stars up the side, like he's got like a rank or something.
Right, right.
The logo, like that German officer thing. Like it's a whole, you can tell it's a whole military look.
And his tights improved over the years too. They went from being like black with a pink stripe or pink with a black stripe.
One of the things I also like that he did, he had a splatter pink on there, and that's like
mid-90s.
A blood, that's like a blood thing, like if a hitman shot someone in the head, the blood splatter, that it's all subtle, and it's what's interesting about it, it's done on a wholesome character, but you don't know that,
right? Exactly. Well, we've got only superstar Graham on there, huh?
Yeah.
I think it's time to start getting some more on there that we're confident are going to make it.
Here's the other problem is I got one more for you.
Go ahead.
Sergeant Slaughter.
I mean, it's fitting the character more than almost any.
Yeah.
Maybe besides Doink.
Sergeant Slaughter. Yeah, Doink. But Sergeant Slaughter, because the hat, and it was early on. That's the other thing.
80.
Sergeant Slaughter was doing that early.
Right.
You know, the Marine Corps he would come out
right?
to.
That's true.
You know, salute.
It worked.
He even worked his damn chin into the attire. You know?
Oh, man. Slaughter is a good one.
Right. And that was coming off a Full Metal Jacket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That whole look.
Yeah, you're absolutely
really
right.
Really a cool look.
Sergeant Slaughter did have great ring attire.
Right.
I'll give you that. Does Shawn Michaels belong on this or no?
I mean, the cool part about Shawn is that the sexy boy thing, he really played into it. He got his attire in the right. I always liked that coat he had at the very beginning.
His early 92 coat?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know the one you mean.
And it was almost like a Bret Michaels kind of look. Like, I'm a
glam rock.
Yeah, glam rock kind of thing. And I don't know. I like it in his character. It's not like it's like attractive or anything.
No,
but
it's not.
But at least it fits the character. And it was unabashedly stupid, like with the sunglasses with the hearts on him. Like, I like that the character was unaware that he looked like an idiot.
Right,
like,
right.
He thought he was the coolest guy.
He thought
guy
he looked
ever.
So cool, but he looked like a. Even in the mid-90s, he looked really stupid.
And it was actually ahead
leather
of its
cap.
Yeah, it's ahead of its time, too, because it's.
Really?
Because it's kind of like risque, if you think about it. It's like a guy acting like sexual, you know what I mean?
Yes, I don't know. Rick Rude did that.
Yeah, Rick Rude kind of did it, but Shawn Michaels went like whole hog with it.
What about Goldust?
Goldust, there's so many.
There's
good
a
ones.
Lot.
Yeah,
we're gonna Goldust, have to really.
Goldust is a fantastic one. I mean, just bizarre.
Yeah, Goldust is great. Between the face paint, the wig, the bodysuit.
The bodysuit, I think, really put it over the top. Like, who the hell was wearing a bodysuit
like that?
Especially like that, because that was. That was to really give you like an S&M kind of thing. Like, you were like, what is this guy into? Like,
yeah.
You know? And he kind of acts female, but he also acts really
very
manly.
Androgynous, yes.
Yeah, like he's all
it
over the
all
place.
Fit into the character.
And the Marlena thing really worked in it, too, because he's got a woman with him, but he acts like a lady.
He's kissing
like,
guys, you
he's
know?
Kissing
it's
guys.
Weird.
It was very mysterious.
And the ring attire, including the wig. He had a wig.
He had a wig that he took off that if you had never seen Goldust before.
And you didn't know he was Dustin Rhodes.
Right. You would think it was his hair.
Yeah.
And he takes it off and you're like, what the fuck? Like, how weird.
I would like to put him on.
You know what? Yeah.
It was really unique for its time.
I've never, just like Billy Graham was really unique and ahead of its time, Goldust.
And it fit all into the character. So for number two, Goldust?
Yeah, let's do Goldust.
Goldust for number two. How about The Undertaker?
Yeah, The Undertaker, like, another crazy, revolutionary, the look.
Yeah, because for 1990, especially 91, all black with the gray boots.
Yeah,
you know,
the gloves.
And the gloves.
The one thing The Undertaker did that was really special about him is he wore eye makeup to look like he was actually an undead zombie.
Yeah, he did that a little bit. Did he do that from the beginning?
Yes.
He did, even
in
the early days.
I remember when he first
took
his hat off, Gorilla remarks about, it looks like he hasn't slept in
yes,
weeks.
Yes, you're
like,
right.
Look at them eyes! We need a little night-night time there, Bell!
I mean, the character...
They played right into it.
Superbly designed, whoever... Yep. You got to give a lot of credit to a lot of these ring attire. There's people that work for these companies, you know, all these promotions, that were in charge of, like, the look. They would do sketches and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like,
definitely.
The Undertaker, somebody put a lot of work...
Into this.
Like, this was not just a throwaway thing.
No, and it always evolved. I mean, my least favorite version of the Mortician character, anyway, was probably the Purple Taker.
Eh. I didn't have a problem. I think that was just a different color. Yeah, I didn't like it. It was the same kind of thing.
It didn't look as serious.
I don't know. I like the long stringy hair though, because it looked like an undead.
Yeah,
like it looked better actually than the mullet.
You want to go with Undertaker? It's so unique. So is Kane.
Kane.
Early Kane, like 90,
not,
you know.
To me, Kane's more of a ripoff of the Undertaker. Like, the Undertaker is the Undertaker.
I could put Undertaker on as number
what
three.
What about Mankind, though? And
Brown?
Or Cactus Jack, even.
Cactus Jack!
Yeah.
The wanted shirt and the flannel.
Yeah.
I love it.
I love it, too.
It
I just don't
him.
Know if it's, like, on the list.
It's not. It's, like, up there with, like, Sandman or something, you know, where it's, like, okay.
Sandman's another good one, because that, nobody was fucking doing that. Raven?
Raven?
Holy shit.
Yeah, like, Raven's good. I still think Steve Austin deserves to be on this thing.
I do too, and only because out of all of the guys, he's the only one that went for the basic look and made it work. Like, he was ballsy enough to say, I don't need fancy tights, and the fans will love it, and they dug that he dressed that way.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that Goldberg wouldn't have dressed like that if Austin hadn't first.
No, no,
you know?
Yeah.
Even though they say he was a Shamrock ripoff, you know?
Yeah, the idea that he could look like a badass.
Yeah. Austin for number three.
Austin.
I mean, the black trunks, the black boots, the Austin 316 vest or shirt.
Yeah.
That was late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Well, Michael, one more. What are we thinking?
You said Goldberg, but you know what that reminds me of? I really like his attire.
Yeah.
I love Brock Lesnar's modern attire. Like, I really think he looks awesome. Like,
The UFC shorts.
It's something nobody really has ever done. The UFC, the full on, the shoes he wears, like the wrestling shoes, like he looks like he will kill you. He's got a sword on his chest. I mean, look at him.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Like, nobody's doing that, and nobody ever did anything like that. The Jimmy John, so he has, like, a sponsor. Like, he looks like he's a real fighter.
Yeah. I don't know, though, Quinn. Hulk Hogan ripped off part of his attire, and that was part of his whole gimmick.
I understand that, but it's so basic. Like, if we're talking about ring attire, like, I think, like, Rick Rude is higher than that.
Stands out more. Warrior stands out more.
Yeah.
Savage.
Yeah. These are guys that their ring attire was way more their thing. Like, Hulk Hogan was about the talking and the charismaticness. He could have worn anything. Like, he wore white sometimes.
He,
like,
did in the earlier days.
He wore the black and white NWO.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
I don't know. Like, I love his NWO tights, but I really think Rick Rude is, like, being overshadowed here, because I think he was an early guy who made a whole brand and look around his attire.
I think Ric Flair was even more.
That too, yeah.
And then there's one more we're forgetting in that same vein.
What?
The Rock.
The Rock, yeah.
Because all those shirts he used to wear as part of his, but that's not really in-ring attire. Yeah, I think Flair, if we're going to go for a number four here that's not Hulk Hogan.
Flair
it's
had
gotta
a complete
be Rick
look
Flair.
That he talked about. And,
yes.
Yeah, Ric Flair.
The robes, Quinn.
The robes.
The
and,
robes.
An honorable mention to Sergeant Slaughter, by the way. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah, Sergeant Slaughter. And there's so many good ones, but.
Yeah. Did we not even put the Macho Man on?
Like, no.
Yeah, but Macho Man's is great, but.
I love it, but Flair's iconic.
Yeah, everything about him. His whole look was his character.
All right, so for number four, Ric Flair.
Yep.
Well, that is our Mount Rushmore of ring attire. We will obviously do the worst now, Quinn, and I suppose I'll start with that.
Yep.
And I'm going to start, Quinn, with possibly the worst that I can think of anyway.
Okay.
Bastion Booger. You want to describe this thing?
Strappy things over his fat and, like,
gray.
He looks like the State Puff Marshmallow Man or something. Like,
yeah, and, like, in the
it's
back,
disgusting.
It was to make him look as horrible as possible.
Yes.
So I guess it fit the gimmick, but here's the thing. No one wanted to look at that.
No one ever wanted to look at that. And the food drizzling, like, greasy food drizzling down his hairy chest.
Bastion Booger, I guess.
Take a look at this monster, would you? My goodness, he had no teeth. What a grotesque individual.
It was awful.
It's so bad that, like, I can't even make arguments against, like, anything there's, knocking. It's so disgusting.
There's no justifying it.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, that guy, I want him to lose. It's like, I want him to put clothes on. It's a different thing.
Like, please go away.
Please go away.
Fuck you. Like, I hate it. It's so bad, Joe.
Are we dying?
I feel like we haven't even discussed it enough, but it's so disgusting that I don't even want to discuss it anymore.
Folks, obviously this is an audio podcast, so I would advise you right now to go look up a picture of Bastion Booger.
Ugh.
If you don't know what he looks like.
I advise you not to. I don't think it's good for your health to look at Bastion Booger.
For number one, Bastion Booger.
Die, die, die.
Okay, what do you got, Quinn?
What about, this is a weird one.
Sure.
I didn't even mention this ever to you.
Okay.
What about PM News?
Yo, baby, yo, baby, yo.
Do you remember that guy?
PN News.
PN News.
What did
PM
he
News?
Wear, though?
He wore, like, this neon green, attire, like tights, but he was really fat.
This was a rapper gimmick in WCW.
Yeah.
I don't know. Wasn't Mabel worse?
I don't know, because, like, PN News is, like, it's more disgusting because it's tight.
He did look really stupid.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's rap. Like, you usually wear baggy clothes when you're a rapper, too.
Not skin tight jumpsuits or whatever
it was.
Awful. What about Jeff Jarrett and his strappy things?
I know you hate it a lot, but I don't think it's in the realm of, like, the worst thing ever.
Okay.
Like, it's terrible, but it's not that bad. And he would improve his look over time anyway.
That's true. What about Max Moon? That was so stupid looking.
It was stupid.
He was. This is, folks, a blue neon costume with, like, circuit boards on it and, like, a dangly mask and a jetpack. Like, what was this?
I don't know. It was like he was, like, plugging in the Matrix or something.
That was really bad. So was Battle Cat.
I was going to say Battle Cat is, like, the closest thing to that.
Because he was a cat, which is stupid.
But was he supposed to be, like, Tiger Mask or something,
I guess? No, Battle Cat.
Yeah,
It's like the baby
saying,
version of Tiger Mask,
like the shitty version.
Nice arm ringer by Mr. Cat.
Well, we know it's not Boss Man's mom.
What's not Boss Man's mom?
Battle Cat, because she'd be wrestling as Battle Swine.
Please.
Those are bad.
There's so many horrible ones.
Oh, how about our friend Giant Gonzalez?
Yes, Giant Gonzalez in the bodysuit. Always a contender. You know what's worse? Like, there's other versions of that where he's, like, hairier or less hairier.
Sometimes,
like,
he has painted on hair. Sometimes there's real hair.
The one where he has, like, a hairy diaper practically on is, like, the worst thing.
Yeah, the hairy diaper.
The worst thing I've ever seen.
I would like to put that on because that is a horrible bodysuit.
But I'm going to be specific and hairy diaper version.
Okay.
Of Giant Gonzalez is the worst version.
So for number two, hairy diaper version of Giant Gonzalez in his bodysuit.
Die, die, die.
Two down, two to go,
it's
Michael.
So, why is it so easy?
What about Big Daddy V, his fat straps?
Anything ever that Mabel Viscera, whatever his real name is.
Nelson Frazier.
Nelson Frazier wore ever is horrible. Whether it be the Mabel, like, trash bag thing with overalls. Whether it be the time he knocked Vivian over and then became, like, a suave, like.
Yeah, big, what was it? Big
Daddy? It was just still Viscera at that. But it wasn't Big Daddy V yet.
He was still Viscera, but he wore pajamas.
He wore pajamas. Whether it be just Viscera in general with the, like, shiny trash bag over, like, tight tights.
Right, the hefty bag.
Right. Whether it be Big Daddy V with his boobs hanging out and terrible tattoos and his hair short and his eyes are weird.
Right.
Everything he ever wore was bad.
What about all these occupational wrestlers?
Yes, we got to get into this because they're bad. The Goon with the ice skates that aren't ice skates. First of all, why would you wear that from, like, a kayfabe rational any perspective at all? Like,
what, ice skates?
I'm going to wrestle, so let me put myself at a disadvantage by, like, balancing on, like, roller blades. I took the blades off of, you know, the wheels or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like Duke Drozzi, right? Garbage Man?
Yeah.
Why is he wearing his Garbage Man attire to the ring?
I will say this. He was the only smart wrestler with his attire because of this one thing.
What?
The back support.
He did have a back brace on, yeah. That
I
was
will
smart.
Say
was
that
wise.
When you're body slamming people,
that's good.
Everyone should wear that.
Yeah, too, like, bad he never won any matches,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Remember when he feuded with Triple H in, like, 96?
Yes.
And no one remembers that because it was horrible. And he had the haircut.
Yeah. What about any, like, country boy hillbilly thing?
Overalls?
Like Uncle Elmer?
Well, Uncle Elmer sucks, but I don't think overalls, I mean, that's okay, don't you think?
You're okay with that?
I'm okay with overalls.
Again, you're wrestling. Why?
I know, because you like them.
You feel
Man Mountain Dean used to wear them.
Man Mountain Dean. What about Man Mountain Rock?
He
with the WWF guitar.
Oh, my goodness, with the tie-dye jumpsuit?
Yeah.
Ooh.
The WWF guitar is the main thing.
Oh my goodness gracious, that was bad.
What about Aldo Montoya?
We might have a winner here, Quinn, because why did he wear a diaper on his head?
It's like a backwards, like...
You've heard of Tiger Mask. This is Diaper Mask.
It was more like...
Jockstrap?
Jockstrap, yeah. He had a jockstrap on his face.
Why did he do that? And
I
then
don't
he
know.
Wore, like, guacamole pants with, like, yellow and red.
I always thought the idea of a Portuguese man of war was the stupidest thing ever. It was so stupid that I recall my dad laughing at just the mention of Portuguese man of war.
Yes, like, I believe you've told me this.
I don't know why. I don't know if that's like a historical thing, like, or something, but...
Mr. Quinn, you know, thought that was very funny.
Yeah, it was. It was a big joke around our house.
I think a man-o-war is a flower, actually, a Portuguese man-o-war.
Is it?
Or a fish.
Is that like, it's like an oxymoron or something?
It's not even. It's just stupid. I'm okay with putting that in because it was really bad.
Aldo Montoya, I don't think it ranks up there high enough. Are you sure?
I don't know.
I mean,
what else is really bad?
I don't like Skinner, for example. Like,
why?
I
he's the way
Shawn look.
Michaels looks like that now.
It's just disgusting because he adds in that
oh, come
tar
on.
Crap he puts in his mouth.
He's not. It's not tar. It's tobacco.
He just looks like a jobber.
Ooh.
That should be an automatic disqualification.
No! Skinner? What are you talking... At least he wore something unique.
What about Big Bully Busick? You know why? You know what's the problem with Big Bully Busick?
Everything?
No, but here, his whole attire is a problem to me because he looks like the Bolsheviks, just with a bowler hat on from Mr. Fuji. It's like he has Fuji's hat and, like, Boris Zhukov and Nikolai Volkov's, like, attire.
He's kind of cobbled together, isn't he?
Yeah, and
that's
the
not
stupid
bad.
Mustache, like Rick Rude, but like with the curly Q mustache.
Can I just tell you, I think Bam Bam Bigelow's attire was dumb.
Yes! I
used to think it was good.
Yeah.
The more I've thought about it, though... Bam Bam
is an awesome wrestler with
him.
A shitty, like, attire.
He's no... His attire is notably stupid.
Yeah, it's like... Just because
right.
you have the flames on your head doesn't mean you have to wear the flames every single area
inch
on
of your
body.
Body.
Yeah, it's stupid.
But is he worse than Bundy? Because Bundy's doublet, you know, his singlet with a double strap.
I'll say this about Bundy.
Yeah.
Bundy's attire, I'm fine with it in when he didn't have the eyebrows. When he did have the eyebrows.
That's true.
It ruins everything.
But the attire is the same. Oh, Ahmed Johnson. Because his knee pads were the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. Remember his knee pads?
I don't know.
Remember Ahmed?
I would say Ahmed's like non-wrestling attire was more questionable than his wrestling attire.
His like imitation like doink pants.
Yeah.
Whatever they were.
Yeah, he'd always wear those weird pants and like those jackets, like those bomber jackets.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And
they had the puffy jacket,
dumbass
right?
shit on them.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's way worse.
Shoot. All right, well, what about Repo Man? He looked really stupid. He had like tire marks on
Here's
him.
Here's the thing with the Repo Man.
You're
always
defending this.
Boggled. No, I
oh,
didn't like it.
Okay.
It made him look smaller, and it was Smash.
It was Smash. He was a pretty big guy.
Yeah, so I don't know how the hell they did pull that off.
And he had the Lone Ranger mask, which Repo Men don't need to wear a mask.
Yeah.
Like, they're not villains.
I got one for you, and we might finally get a person that's in both Mount Rushmore and Death Valley.
What?
Seven. That Goldust thing where he was like in WCW and he had the white face paint, like his whole, like even his head was painted white, and he had like the Undertaker hat on, and he looked like an idiot.
Put everybody in here to take a good long look at this crap I'm in.
What?
I left the World Wrestling Federation for gimmicks like this.
Yeah, but is that the worst? I mean, it was bad, yes.
It's notable. Like, anytime I see, like, weird, like, attire pictures, they always show that Seven thing.
It's not worse than Glacier.
I think it might be worse than
Glacier. It's not worse than the Ding Dongs. They wore, like, a gold bodysuit.
Well, here's the thing with the Ding Dongs. They were basically the Conquistadors.
That's not good either.
Yeah.
Seven? I don't know.
Seven.
No one knows who Seven is.
What about when Alex Wright became, like,
Berlin? That was okay. It wasn't that bad.
His attire was weird. Oh, I got one.
What?
What was that guy, the symphony with it? He had a symphony with him.
The maestro.
Bob Cobb?
You know, the maestro.
Oh, I missed the maestro?
The maestro.
Bob Cobb. All right, you want to put the maestro in? Why do you want to put the maestro in?
His puffy shirt.
Okay.
Yeah.
The maestro.
The puffy shirt, it didn't fit at all. He was horrible. He looked like a lady with that hair, too.
Yeah.
Everything about him was shitty.
Is he really the worst? He's up there.
I don't know. I think Seven's was still worse.
Fine. Seven for number three. Okay, that's fine.
The first ever person to be on both.
Dustin Rhodes has made the best, and now he's going to make the worst as Seven. Ugh.
Die, die, die.
You're right. I mean, it's really bad.
It's
I'm not
horrible.
You're right. Now, We have the giant Gonzalez. We have Seven, and we have Bastion Booger.
Yes.
Mabel?
Mm-hmm.
The whole
Mabel.
We talked about the whole Mabel
thing. The whole thing with him.
He's
I don't know,
bad,
is there any other people you can think of?
That look really stupid wrestling or nonsensical wrestling attire?
Yeah. What about when Owen Hart had the, like...
Danger
signs on him?
Yeah. That was really... Honestly, that was like a fall from grace in terms of ring attire. That was really, really stupid.
Yeah, it was.
I don't like that at all.
It's very sad.
That's actually one of my least favorite attires ever, just because it looked bad.
And because it, like, brought Owen down.
Yeah.
And then remember the time that guy made fun of it in DX? He wore like actual tape.
Jason Sensation?
Yeah.
That was funny,
and
actually.
Mizark. Yeah. And that's another one.
And what the hell am I doing wearing this ridiculous outfit? I look like a damn road sign. What the hell am I? A school crossing?
Ken Patera 1988 looks bad.
Oh, oof.
Oof.
Yeah, Ken Patera.
Good lord.
Yeah, he looks like Richard Simmons. We always say that. But is it the worst? Is it, like, so unabashedly stupid? like what about Norman the Lunatic?
Now, that's Bastion Booger.
Yes. Holy crap. Oh, my God.
Wow. Now, can he go in twice?
Is that against the rules? I don't know.
Who makes the rules?
We do.
Oh, okay. Then you want to? I don't know. Let's cut him a break, okay?
Okay.
Let's cut Norman the Lunatic a break here.
What about Tugboat? No. Wait.
Wait. Okay.
The Shockmaster.
Yep. That's it.
Yep.
Shockmaster.
Because
of the Stormtrooper helmet that was glittery.
Yeah.
The big woolly vest.
The way he had to talk with like a weird.
It was
thing.
Ole Anderson talking
yeah.
for him.
They call me the Shockmaster.
He had jeans and no shirt.
It looked like they didn't even try. He had like
right.
sneakers on and sweatpants.
Right, yes. Yeah, he's in. The Shockmaster.
Yeah, the Shockmaster.
For number four.
Yeah.
Die, die, die.
Trip, trip, trip. All right, well, thank you to Colin Middleton and AJ Smith for the Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of ring attire. Of course, we have differing opinions possibly than you folks. Maybe we forgot stuff, simply didn't think of it. There's a lot of ring attire. So let us know your thoughts. In fact, why don't you tweet it at us, a picture of it, or put it on our Facebook group. You can do that by reaching us at OVP Podcast on the Twitter. Join the group. Email us at OVPPodcast@gmail.com. Quinn, when we come back, we're pulling out some lighting equipment here because we are reviewing something.
Yes, we are.
Back after this.
After a hard day at the office, working up a big thirst, many professionals reach for the smooth taste of Mellow Yellow.
Woo, baby! Mellow Yellow, the taste that beats Mountain Dew.
And now, Mellow Yellow has pictures and all the facts on your favorite NWA wrestlers. Ric Flair, Sting, the Road Warriors,
and even my pretty face.
Head to your favorite store and collect all 12.
Woo! Take it from Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream. Make the Mellow Yellow move.
Hello, wrestling fans. Joe and Quinn here, interrupting this commercial break to give you a very important announcement. As of next week's episode, Quinn, we will no longer be with the Place to Be Nation.
The time has come.
The time has come. Yes, and we're very thankful for our time there. Nothing but good thoughts about those guys and very appreciative that they've taken us on for all of 2017 so far.
Yes, thank you so much to the Place to Be Nation.
Yes, but as of October 16th, that'll be our last episode, and after that, we will only be available on our own feed. So, this message is basically to inform you that if you only listen to us right now on the Place to Be Nation feed, you have another 2 weeks to switch over to our very own feed, Quinn.
Yes, you can find it over on Apple Podcasts. Type in Our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. We'll be right there. You can find us Google Play Music, Stitcher, you know, all the normal places you can find podcasts. You just look for us and you will find us.
Exactly. So, again, a big thank you to the Place to Be Nation. Next week's episode will be our last there. So, make sure you switch over. If you still love listening to our show, you can listen to it on our very own feed.
Yes.
Let's take you to Sean Mooney.
Hey, it's Sean Mooney. I may no longer be in the event center, but if I was, I'd be talking about our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. All right, boys, let's get to it.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Quinn, we are reviewing something.
Yes, we are.
This is unfortunate.
Yes.
Now, folks, this is WWF Spotlight. If you've never heard of that, you're not alone, I bet.
It's like the Z-tier show.
Yeah,
it's awful.
If Superstars is A, right?
Yeah.
Challenge was B.
Right.
Primetime was maybe C because it wasn't really important.
Yeah.
This isn't even in the alphabet. Yeah. I don't know what this is.
This is like alpha.
Yeah, you need to draw
beta,
pictures.
There's, Zeta.
This is not even on the periodic table of the elements.
Yeah.
Spotlight, though, in all seriousness, well, as serious as you could be with professional wrestling, I suppose, was really their C-level syndicated show in terms of importance. And you could tell.
Oh, yeah, you could tell with this crap.
This show is so bad that, like, we didn't even get it in our markets. And to be fair here, it ran from 86 to 95.
86 to 95. That's freaking insane.
9 years.
What's crazy is that we were watching wrestling by then and we didn't even know it existed.
Right. We did not have it. We had we had Superstars and sometimes Challenge.
I
like
guess.
Occasionally. But we never had Spotlight.
Never, ever.
And I can see why we did not have Spotlight.
I'm
why
glad
New York.
We didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad too. I would have wasted a lot of time watching this.
We probably would have watched it every week and been disappointed every week.
Yes, I believe so, Quinn. So from WWF Spotlight, August 4th, 1990, we're just weeks away now from SummerSlam 90.
Exciting.
Very exciting. We'll find out a lot about that card. We open, Quinn, with the crappy sax theme.
It's basically the intro to Superstars, like when it first was Superstars, when it had like the motion picture tape.
Yes, and also the WrestleMania video game for Nintendo.
Right.
And we are hosted by Ian Mooney.
Yes. Not Sean.
No.
Not the man that was on this show.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ian Mooney. Welcome to WWF Wrestling Spotlight.
And as we asked Sean about what the deal was with Ian, apparently there was different coats and hair or something.
His hair was slicked back. He still has the comeback hair here.
He does. And he's got an empty chair next to him because apparently what they were doing during this period of time was a series of guest hosts. Ian Mooney would make his last appearance, by the way, Quinn. In May of 91.
That's crazy. The Ian Mooney character existed that long.
I know. But unfortunately, his guest here is Tugboat. Now,
not the Shockmaster.
Not the Shockmaster. The
not
Tugboat.
Typhoon.
He comes out with his music. And
it's
a
so loud.
And a Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy.
Yeah.
And you said to me, Quinn, we don't want to see Tugboat.
I don't want to ever see Tugboat on anything. What is this character anyway, Joe? Like, seriously, he just drives tugboats all day? Like, what the hell is he?
I think he is a tugboat.
What?
I think that's right. Or is he
somebody ride him?
Is he a sailor or is he a tugboat? Because if he's a sailor, why is his name Tugboat?
He isn't shaped like a tugboat. Like, he wears the hat. Like, a tugboat doesn't wear the sailor hat.
Or talk.
Right.
So a sailor wears a sailor hat but happens to be named. Oh, it's like a nickname.
I think
it's a nickname.
I think I've seen a Disney cartoon or two where a tugboat talked.
Yeah, you think so? Well, this is unfortunate. I wish this tugboat didn't talk. They talk about Hulk Hogan, because that's literally the only relevance that Tugboat ever had is talking about Hulk Hogan.
He's a waste of space. Like, he sucks in all of wrestling. He might be one of the worst people in wrestling.
I can't believe we forgot him on the worst WWF wrestlers.
Yes, but I would say
there's hope for him.
He's the worst WCW wrestler,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe.
Now, did anyone even watch this show? Like, seriously.
I just want to know. I don't know if they were able to watch this show. They might have had to get on a tugboat to go find it.
So they bring up, of course, Earthquake and Dino Bravo. And then we throw to Jake Roberts versus some doughy guy in a burnt orange Andre singlet.
Basically in a match where you know that somebody's getting their ass DDT'd and it's not Jake Roberts.
Correct. And it's a challenge match here. It's Gorilla and Heenan on commentary.
Yep.
This is what we call here in the industry a squash match.
Yes, a big old squash match. And I mean, it was good because it only lasted like 2 minutes or something.
Yeah, exactly. Jake has blue tights. He punches a lot. I don't know who the ref is, by the way. Seriously, though, who watched this show?
They're recapping a B show. It's basically Jake wrestled this week.
Like, that's like what they're saying, right?
Yeah, that's all they're saying here, Joe. I mean, Jake's probably one of the more prominent people that wrestled between the A and B show.
Right, right.
So they were like, hey, Jake did something. Let's watch it.
Short arm clothesline, DDT, Jake pins him with one finger. Goodbye. Then we clip to, yay, Hogan's big return or some crap from Saturday Night's Main Event in July.
He already looks like assy, like ticker tape parade in 93 Hulk Hogan here.
After WrestleMania 6, it was all downhill for Hogan's face and personality, apparently.
I mean, he did everything but give the thumbs up here.
You're right. Yeah. Every other trademark and hallmark is there.
Yeah.
So Vince is in the ring to interview the Hawkster here. And you said to me, Vince has Ian Mooney here.
Yeah, it's all slick back. And he is so damn proud.
That he's got Hogan back.
He's like, oh, time to make more money.
Now, by the way, who's the world champion at this time?
Ultimate Warrior.
Okay. So Hogan says thank you to all the Hulkamaniacs for helping him not get dead by earthquake.
Thank you to each and every one of those Hulkamaniacs that are in these seats tonight.
Mm-hmm. And you said to me, Quinn, he wasn't even really injured. Can he just wrestle?
Yes. Why do we need to hear him talk? He's only been gone like 3 months.
Yeah.
Like, who gives a shit? Like, couldn't they just say, like, he took a break to make a movie? Because he's already, we know he makes movies.
And it's coming out anyway.
Right.
When the hell would he have filmed it?
Right, exactly. They just say, Hulkster's making a movie. That's it. Now he's back. No, right into the Hulk. Like, tell him how much you love him and hug his beanie baby buddy or whatever that thing was that Tugboat was holding.
He does say he's going to answer every single card and letter that he got.
And that's probably never happened. Like, I guarantee you that never happened.
Why is this being replayed? Did anyone watch Spotlight?
I guess not.
Hulk says...
I don't know, Joe. I don't know!
I don't know!
Hulk says the vitamins helped him.
Yeah, you mean steroids? Ridiculous.
Then, of course, Vince mentions how Dino Bravo will be in Earthquake's corner at SummerSlam.
Who cares? Enough with Dino Bravo. Enough. I've had enough of Dino Bravo for one lifetime. How the hell, Joe? We watched this. We did not expect to get more Dino Bravo.
I swear, folks, we never wanted to talk about him again. We meant for our last time we talked about him, the why did they bother Dino Bravo? We meant for that to be it.
He's unavoidable. Like, I don't know how to get away from this man. It's ridiculous.
And they don't know how to get away from Hogan because Earthquake Bravo and Jimmy Hart charge out and Hogan swings his weightlifting belt at them.
Well, if he doesn't have the Macho Man to help him, what? He's like a loser now?
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah. By himself with a belt. But of course, Fat Tug here runs out and he just sucks.
And then I said to you, if Teddy Long was here, he'd be like, play a straight up tag team match. But he's not here yet, so there is no straight up tag team match.
It's very sad. He's over in the NWA.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hart, by the way, is awesome. He's like managing the run-in with the megaphone. It's funny.
Like, get him!
Yeah, he's like managing. Then... and I'm not making this up, and we did not plan for
unbelievable.
This.
Unbelievable.
This is a random Spotlight pick. Like, literally, Quinn and I were just like, you know what we haven't watched yet? Spotlight.
Right.
We cut to a Dino Bravo squash. Mm. They don't say who he's facing, but I swear he's wearing Bret Hart's 1986 attire.
It's amazing.
The blue stripe.
It's exactly the same. Even the boots.
Yeah.
He's got the boots, everything Bret Hart. It looks like Bret saw him in the back, and maybe he had just like jeans, and he didn't have a tire because he's just a jobber, and he said, here you go, kid.
You know, back in the 70s, when I was wrestling, they wanted me to be a cowboy.
Earl Hebner is the ref, and we, of course, have to have, during a Dino Bravo squash match, an insert promo with Dino Bravo.
No. Just no. Enough. No more Dino Bravo, ever. Like, I'm proposing that whenever we run into a Dino Bravo thing from now on, we just skip it.
Fine.
Yeah.
Will he get the Chris treatment?
Yes.
He should. From now on, he should get that.
Yeah, so I'm going to say his name and you're going to edit it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, airplane spin by into a side suplex for the win.
Awful. Just terrible. Just never again, please.
So we get the event center with Sean Mooney, and I actually found something out very interesting today, Quinn. You and I both did. So Quinn and I were watching this, and we were looking at the control room, and I was like, you know what, Quinn? I'm not sure, but I think that control room, and forgive us if you knew this, okay?
Yeah.
We didn't. I think that control room is a green screen. And Quinn's like, no, I don't think so.
That
I'm like, yeah, you might be
this
right.
This is one of the better green screens they've ever done because I never could ever tell. Like,
seriously.
This one looks... and why would they? Because it's filmed in Stanford anyway. The control room is there. Why not just put a fucking table in there and have Sean Mooney in front of it?
Right, because Gene was really in that control room.
Right.
I think.
Well, now I don't know.
Well, he was because he interacted with the people.
Well, tell
there.
The fans why we know now.
I messaged Mooney. And he got back to us, and he's like, yep, it was a green screen, and the background was on a loop.
Unbelievable.
Like, I actually really didn't know that.
Thought that was not a green screen, and usually we can tell.
Yeah, I know.
That's
so
crazy.
So, shame on us. Maybe you learned something, maybe you knew that, and we're stupid. But anyway,
More importantly, we got some matches at the Boston Garden coming up, Joe.
October 18th, you better be there, because we got Nikolai Volkov versus Boris Zukov. Yes, that's right, the Bolsheviks explode.
Yeah, and here's a weird thing about this, Joe.
Go ahead.
Boris Zukov should be the face here, because he's not the one who betrayed his country and, like, went to another country.
You know what? He has the right to be a communist still. The USSR is still a thing.
He was born a communist, like, and he's sticking with it.
Hey, you have a valid point. Not that we endorse communism, but we endorse
loyalty.
Patriotism.
Yeah.
The Hearts and Duggan versus Demolition. Mm. You know what that means, Quinn, for Demolition.
Fucking crush.
Fucking crush.
We'll get into him later.
Yeah. Hillbilly Jim versus Hercules.
Great.
Dusty and Sapphire versus Savage and Sherry with Brother Love in their corner.
Now, you never know if that's just the match they filmed where Brother Love actually wrestled.
Mm.
I've seen this mentioned on other like shows we've watched.
Yes.
And like I'm never sure if this is that weird match from like Coliseum video where
Sherry's in a dress.
Sherry wrestling in a dress and Gorilla's upset about it and Brother Love wrestling in the white suit.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And then Rick Martel shows off his new like perfume bottle.
You know, I always say packaging is everything. Just for instance, take a look at this beautiful designer bottle here.
It's not the Arrogance Atomizer.
It's like a Japanese urn or something. It's really weird.
So good. This is such a good thing. And behind him is like a Trapper Keeper background.
Yeah, or Lisa Frank design in the background. It's really weird, actually.
And then we get a Hillbilly Jim promo. Really?
Hillbilly Jim could have been good, as we've discussed on the boards.
Yeah, if he wasn't playing that character.
They should have made him like Southern Justice.
You know, he played a character before this, Quinn, in the wherever promotion he was, territory.
World Hillbilly Federation
he
or
was,
something?
No, he was named Harley Davidson, and he did a biker gimmick.
He could have done that.
Yeah,
that
I know.
Would be fine also.
I know.
He's big. Like, this is a big guy. He's intimidating.
Yep. So, honestly, you better get to that Boston Garden show. Just get there.
You better fucking get there.
SummerSlam update with Gene Okerlund and Quinn.
You better get to that fucking show, too, because that's a big deal.
But, Quinn, it's only available on a pay-per-view basis.
What was all the deal with the basis thing?
I don't know.
What kind of basis?
Pay-per-view.
Why not just you have to order it on pay-per-view? Like, what is this basis?
I don't know. Maybe Vince thought it sounded good.
I guess.
Anyway, they run down the card. Hogan Earthquake.
Cool.
Rude Warrior for the world title in a cage.
Might I add, they make the Warrior look so much cooler in the picture than Rick Rude.
Yeah, Rude looks like a doofus in this picture. The Hearts versus the Demos for the tag titles.
Yep.
Perfect versus Mystery Man because Beefcake's face was broken.
Yeah, Mystery Foot more.
Jake and Bad News in a match that Quinn forgot ever happened.
Yeah, I really thought that was like canceled or something.
It was so unimportant that everyone forgets it happened.
I thought Bad News quit by that point.
No, he left in October, I think. Okay. Bossman's a special ref, by the way, for that. Savage versus Dusty, where Dusty just gets his ass kicked.
Amazing.
It's really funny.
Such a weird thing.
Sapphire versus Sherry. Now, that didn't happen.
Yeah, and Sherry wrestled in the cat dress
or whatever. She was a cat.
Yeah.
She was a witch in 89. She was a cat in 1990.
Right.
Very strange. And the Rockers, of course, versus Power and Glory in a great match because Power and Glory win.
Yeah, but
like
it's also
them.
That match where, like,
Michaels.
Sean gets killed or something at the beginning, and they're, like, carting him away.
I love that match, and so does all of the Philadelphia Spectrum, because they're cheering Power and Glory for the win.
Boo.
Now, Quinn, did you know, because I don't know if this has been established yet on the show, that the was in Earthquake's corner?
Fuck. No more. Enough.
How about a promo with Earthquake and
No!
How about Hogan and Tugger rebutting?
No!
I have a direct quote from Hulk Hogan.
This is great.
This is amazing, and I will cut it in. As we stood on the bottom of the ocean floor,
God,
we hung and bung for 12 hours, man.
As we stood on the bottom of the ocean floor, we hung and bung for 12 straight hours, man.
Like, is this like the time Hogan was clinically dead on Baywatch?
Maybe.
Oh, this explains why he survived on
the Wave
Baywatch.
Runner. Yeah, yeah, right.
Because remember, because he was underwater for like 20 minutes or something.
Now, Hogan has a lot of experience with the ocean floor. I'm starting to sound like Petey because he slammed Andre and all of his other opponents to the ocean floor at WrestleMania 4.
Right, and he saved Donald Trump and his family.
Thank God Donald Trump's a Hulkamaniac, obviously.
Right. That's why we have like Ivanka and all that, because it was all Hulk Hogan.
To this day.
Yeah.
It's huge. So I'll give Hogan credit for this, though, Quinn. No one can cut a promo like that.
I mean, it's insane.
To use the word bung.
I don't know if anyone would want to cut a promo like that.
There's only one Hulk Hogan, I'll tell you that much. Tugboat has the absolute truth, though. The line of the show, Quinn.
Yes, this is good.
I can't believe how stupid these people are.
I can't believe how stupid these people are.
I agree. Is stupid.
Yes, I agree too. Yeah. We finally talk about the actual, you know, world champion. Remember him, the Ultimate Warrior?
Okay, this is where I say to you,
yes,
I'm starting to think.
Yep, go ahead.
Like that the Ultimate Warrior failing had nothing really to do with the Ultimate Warrior as much as the push itself, because they clearly don't give a shit about the Ultimate Warrior. They're not even trying.
You are correct about that. In the same vein, though, the Ultimate Warrior was not Hulk Hogan.
He wasn't, but come on, you could at least make a fair attempt.
You're
like, Hulk Hogan had, like, kids, like, running up to his bike and, bullshit.
Yep.
And all these vignettes and
letter writing campaigns, Get Well Soon, Hulk, all this shit.
It's ridiculous. They didn't give the Warrior a chance.
They really didn't. Again, he wasn't going to be as good as Hogan
ever. We're 3 months removed from WrestleMania.
Yeah,
come on.
And all Warriors don't is fight Haku on Saturday Night's main event and shit like that.
Being that music video fighting the chicken. Remember that?
Yeah, isn't that a Phil Collins thing?
Phil Collins dressed up as a chicken fighting the Ultimate Warrior. That's really going to get him over.
Nothing says 1990 like that statement, though.
Yeah.
Phil Collins chicken Ultimate Warrior music video.
Yeah.
Was Andrew Dice Clay there?
I feel
That'll
like
really
that
drive
was
it home.
The extent that they pushed the Ultimate Warrior.
Well, anyway, we get a promo from Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan. Now, Rick Rude, Quinn, is hanging down from a piece of the steel cage.
This is weird.
Yeah.
And it really reminds me of the time that Sherry Zeus and Macho Man were going crazy.
Yes, and Sherry's climbing the cage.
Yeah, everyone's always trying to do something crazy with the cage. So Rick Rude decides he's going to hang upside down and Bobby's going to be like confused about it or something.
It's great. A few weeks ago, we posted a picture of it, actually.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's because it's very, very funny. So Warrior has his short hair and nifty headband, and he cuts a promo about boundaries and limitations. And I have to say, Quinn, this is the area where Warrior looked like he was in a glam metal band.
Yeah, he looked like Bret Michaels.
He had an earring.
Yeah, earring. I thought that was face paint. Yeah, I thought that was his like off day attire. You don't want to put all that face paint on, but hell,
true.
You gotta have some face paint. You're Warrior.
It's true. And then we cut to the weirdest fucking thing I've ever seen for August of 1990, and that is Ronnie Garvin and some jobber versus Rhythm and Blues.
Whoever wanted to see this? This is like a Coliseum Video fan request where you're like, what?
And not only that, we're joined in progress.
Thankfully.
We have Lord Hayes and Mooney. This must be like a primetime rip or an All-American exclusive.
What's this Eurosport on the top?
Yeah,
corner?
I don't know. This show got cobbled together.
Yeah.
Rhythm and Blues, though, Quinn, was shit, you said?
Oh, they sucked. I mean, this was, first of all, this is what dragged Greg Valentine down to like the depths. Like, he could have been saved in 89.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
This is what killed him.
And you all know my thoughts on Honky Tonk Man, if you haven't been listening.
Honky Tonk was
like
already
him.
Done by this
he
point.
He was done by 88, man.
Yeah.
Honestly, by 88. I cannot believe he's still here 2 years after 88.
What a waste of space.
This whole thing is a waste of space.
Yeah.
Did we really, though, need not only Dino Bravo, but did we need Ronnie Garvin as a jobber and
Ronnie
Dino
Garvin,
Bravo on the same show?
I don't get how they signed this guy. Let me explain something here.
Go ahead.
Ronnie Garvin in, I believe, 1987 was the world heavyweight champion in the National Wrestling Alliance, not in JCP.
Yeah, he was the world champion of wrestling.
What did they tell him to sign him? Because immediately he's in a shitty feud with Greg Valentine.
Right.
And then he gets like demoted to a ref or something.
Yes.
And then he comes back and he's a jobber.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck? Like, what is this?
Maybe they told him you'll make more money than you did in NWA.
They must have paid him well, because why would you take this downgrade?
You know, I actually have no idea what they told him to hire. Maybe he was just done with Crockett and NWA,
I mean,
and wanted to move on.
What did you say? He was like 43 or something. Maybe he was just
probably 45.
Maybe he was just looking to cushion his like retirement fund or something.
It's possible. So you said to me, this sucks. Why do they think this was a good idea?
I guess because like Greg Valentine and Garvin were going to see each
other. Yeah, for old time's sake.
Yeah, they start fighting.
This was bizarre, Quinn. The jobber got the hot tag.
Yeah,
not
very
Garvin.
Very weird. Like, it's essentially like he makes a hot tag to sacrifice the jobber so Garvin doesn't get pinned.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
What did we wander into? I can't even explain how long this match feels.
It's so long.
And then Rhythm and Blues do get the win after some garbage finisher. Like, even Jimmy Hart's not excited.
Nobody's excited.
Honky's singing Honka Honka Honky Love into the mic. Valentine's pretending to play guitar as they leave. And
God,
said this is the dumbest thing they've ever done.
It's stupid.
Ronnie Garvin and Anderson. And now they're going to be subjected, besides having to take the loss.
Now, back to Ian Mooney and Tugboat talking about who else but Hulk Hogan.
Now, if you noticed, Ian mentioned Hunka Hunka Love, like he talked about it, like he was talking about it at WrestleMania 6, like right afterwards. But it's Ian, so it's
Ian.
it's not Sean.
Good
it's
point.
Not Sean, who's the biggest Mary Richards fan in the world.
She'll always be Mary Richards to me.
Yeah.
Now, Quinn, you had a very, very important question for me here about Tugboat.
Let me ask this question. What adult human being carries along a puffy doll of Hulk Hogan and like clutches it for an hour.
I think that about says it all. Now, we've talked about Hogan cronies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your Nasty Boys.
Yeah.
Your Jim Duggins.
Yes.
Your Brutus Beefcakes.
Right. Or
Brutus Beefcake. Yeah. In terms of on-screen cronyism, though, Tugboat might take the cake or eat the cake. I'm not sure which one.
I don't know. Brian Knobs is like ultra crony, but
you're right.
And Honky's a pretty big crony too.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get a weird feeling with that. Anyway,
you know what? This show is full of Hogan cronies. Like Honky Tonk.
Bravo.
Just
get out of here.
Yeah. Enough.
Brother Love Show from Superstars with LOD. He calls them imposters. And Quinn, you said you...
Yeah, I have a question for you. Do you think Conrad Thompson was like peeking through the curtain? It's like his meal ticket, Bruce Pritchard, doing the interview?
This isn't a good thing here. Mortgages.
So anyway, LOD comes out with like their beta prototype music.
Weird. It sounds like Iron Man, which was their
NWA music.
Oh, yeah, Jesse, take a look at Animal and Hawk.
Animal yells, this blows. Yeah. Hawk doesn't even say well.
Yeah, that was disappointing. And what did Demolition ever do to these guys? Like, what the fuck? Like, I've had enough of them, and they've been here for 5 minutes. Like, they're really new.
I know, you're right.
And, like, they're picking a fight with Demolition didn't say anything to these people.
You're right.
They come in, and they're like, fuck you, Demolition, we're gonna kill you.
But nothing they say matters. Then this match ends. Then, of course, we have to see Demolition versus some jobbers. But, of course, it is the Smash and Crush version.
Mm.
And, of course, Quinn, you had a great question about Axe and his shellfish allergy or whatever this is supposed to be.
Nothing appears to be wrong with him.
Like, ever.
He just looks like Axe.
Like, literally... They always say, like, shellfish allergy. He was there
like
the whole time.
He was on the verge of death. He looks the same. He didn't lose any weight.
He's fine.
He's just Axe.
I think
it's just a dispute between him and
Vince. It is, right?
That's all it is.
I think so.
Shellfish allergy, my ass.
So this
sick for a night, probably. That's about it.
Probably.
Yeah.
This was also from Challenge. As always, Crush sucks.
Yes.
We get an insert promo with LOD, and somehow they manage to piss off Gorilla.
Yes. So, like, immediately, they kind of mouth off to Gorilla when he throws to them.
And Gorilla's like, what do you mean you can't hear us?
Yeah.
Gentlemen, what? We hear you. What do you mean, what we hear? You know, 3-2 odds is not too good.
These guys act like they own the place.
I know.
They're saying, they're just, fuck them. Like, Joe, like, why did they come here and they act like nobody should, like, respect Demolition and that they're the only people worthy of praise.
Fuck them.
That they're the originals. I don't remember them here in like 1987 or 86 or whenever Demolition started.
And WWF is wrestling, damn it.
And Demolition, they did all the fucking work. Like, they had a Garbo gimmick coming in. Like,
nobody gave
a shit about them.
That's true.
They built it all the way up to basically be better than LOD.
Preach, brother. That's
enough.
Right.
And then this Crush fella comes in.
Crust.
His entire career, his name, is based off being in Demolition for like half a year, and he sucks. He sucks. He should have lost the Crush name. They should have just called him Brian, and just like, he should have not been allowed to use the name.
In the meantime here, Demolition gets the win. Gorilla also gets mad that the demo's three-peated, which is funny because he was all happy about it at WrestleMania 6.
He was the guy bringing it up, and Jesse was upset about the three-peat.
Right. And like, now he's like, lingo. No, they three-peated!
Yeah, it's like, those jerks three-peated.
Back to the event center. Go to Boston, okay? Just go to Boston.
Go to Boston, see Dusty with Sapphire versus...
I got the crown jewel. Yeah.
Go see Dusty do things and stuff.
Demolition says stuff.
Yeah.
SummerSlam promo, Quinn. The heat is returning. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Now we get another match here. It is Dusty with Sapphire versus Paul Diamond. This is from Superstars. We got Vince and Jesse on commentary. Yeah. Mark Eaton is the ref. The toe licker himself, Mel Phillips, is the ring announcer. There's a stunt granny dressed like Dusty dancing at ringside. Paul Diamond taunts Sapphire. Sapphire has a big diamond necklace, ironically, and Sherry does an insert promo with her purple dress and wonders how anyone could spend money on Sapphire.
There's so much to dissect here. First of all, the Paul Diamond.
Yes.
Amazing. Like, how is he here?
I love that he's there.
You know, Vince and Jesse, great.
Always.
Mark Eaton as the ref.
It's just always funny.
Why?
Because he's a
timekeeper. Why was this always a thing?
I don't know.
Like, why do we keep running into this?
Who was keeping time when he was refing? I want to know.
It's amazing that there is a stunt grant. Because
she was there.
We've covered. We know why she's there.
Oh, yeah.
And also that she's a big Dusty fan.
She loves Dusty. Well, who doesn't?
Yes. Now, the sapphire with the necklace. Yes. Let's get into this.
Go ahead.
So, this we had thought was more subtle.
Dusty wins with an elbow, by the way.
Right. Who cares?
Right.
Right. Of course he wins.
Yes.
However, yes. Vince is making such a big deal about the necklace. Dusty is making such a big deal about the necklace.
Necklace, necklace, necklace.
They are hitting you over the head with that this necklace is going to mean something, damn it.
Boom. Yes, they are.
And so that's a thing. And even Sherry is, she's not even in on it, which is kind of funny.
She didn't know yet. Yeah.
Yeah. She's mad that she's receiving the necklace. But if I recall at SummerSlam,
she's
when they
gleeful,
find out,
yeah.
they are like cackling and celebrating
it's
like
very funny.
Her and Macho about like the fact that it was the Million Dollar Man just like fucking with them. Like, and by the way, I still love to this day that that Million Dollar Man, he has no pre-existing feud with Dusty Rhodes other than he's an asshole and he thinks it would be funny to like screw with him and Sapphire.
It's really right up DiBiase's alley as far as a character. Like, oh, you're poor, I'm rich, I'm gonna fuck with you.
Yeah.
For no, he didn't want Sapphire.
No.
And my favorite thing is that when Sapphire did get revealed with DiBiase, as you always said, she like showed her coat.
She's like shuffling around.
And that's
like,
it.
Yeah, and then she just like off into the sunset, cut a couple promos that were played for months and just never came back.
And that was it. You never saw her again. But we go to the event center again, and what I have to tell you about it is getting the fuck in your car and go to Boston on August
18th. It's so important.
It's very important. Boris Zukov gives a very useless promo.
Yep.
The Harts and Duggan give a promo where Brett calls him the official third member of the Hart Foundation.
I've never heard of this ever.
I don't like this
I would
at
think it
all.
Would be Danny Spivey or something like that. But
my dad will listen to Danny.
We've got a little surprise for you guys. Yeah, it's a big surprise. It's Hacksaw Jim Duggan, the official third member of the Hart Foundation.
We get a triple ho to end it by all three of them, and then Ian and Tugboat talk about, what do you think, Quinn?
Hulk Hogan. What do you think? Of course. Enough! Enough!
Next week, we're going to see Demolition 3.
What happened to Demolition 2? I thought we went from 1 to 2 here. What's going on? I don't know.
And Jimmy Hart's going to be the co-host. Thank God. That's a lot better than Tugboat.
Yeah.
Final thoughts. Quinn doesn't like Ian Mooney.
Yeah. Ian is the evil version. You subjected me to this. Never invite Tugboat to anything ever again.
No, please.
Sean, I love you. But
we do.
When you're Ian, it scares me.
It's not fun. We need to have Ian Mooney on the show, I think.
Just only Ian Mooney.
I would like our fans right now that are on the social media with us, you know, the Twitter and the cyberspace there, get on the Twitter and tell Sean Mooney that that his brother needs to make an appearance with OVP.
Right.
Now, I've told him. He knows, but I want...
It might happen.
I want to get
a
little grassroots here,
could you imagine if we were the first ever podcast to have Ian Mooney, not Sean Mooney, Ian Mooney.
I think we should do that. So,
in character,
tell Sean to find his brother and get him on the OVP podcast. Yeah. You know, tell him to take just a brief hiatus from talking to Duggan about whatever the hell, and come on our show again.
We had a lot of Duggan in this.
A lot of Duggan. Quinn, this wasn't good.
No, it wasn't. And it's a shame, too, because it's during one of the better times for WWF. I like this time period.
You do. I do. Most don't.
It's focusing on all the wrong things. Like,
this show, you
too
mean?
Too much
Too much Hogan.
Yeah.
Like, shit. If you didn't know the Warrior was champion,
honestly,
you could pass him by in this show and have no idea.
There's a promo in this that we didn't mention where Hogan's... We did mention the promo, but we didn't mention that Hulk Hogan looks like he's wearing a belt.
Oh, yeah.
And you could... You could reasonably think in your brain, if you've watched the show, like that he's the world champion.
The reason for that is like the way the camera angle was in this promo, you can see like the top of his weightlifting belt,
right?
But only the top. So it realistically looked like he's wearing the world title.
Right.
I wonder if that was on purpose.
I bet you it was.
I wouldn't put it past Hogan. Overall, this is a very poor snapshot of this period of time.
It's a very poor spotlight of this time.
Quinn with the win there, so I don't think I would ever want to watch a spotlight again, honestly.
I mean, there's probably more fun episodes, but this one sucked.
Are there more fun ones,
maybe
though, is what I
want to
know.
Maybe in the early days where they thought this would be a show.
I don't know, but you know what is a show, Quinn?
This.
This is a show, and folks, we thank you so much for being with us for 52 episodes, you know, Quinn.
Yes.
By next week, it will have been a year and a few days since we started this wonderful podcast.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And folks, we could not have done it without you. We thank you so much for your support over the last year. Thank you for continuing to give us suggestions for anything you want us to talk about, for reaching us on the social media. Please join our Facebook group if you haven't yet. Leave us a review on iTunes. And you know what? Don't forget to recommend a friend. You could win a free shirt and an appearance on the show.
Yes.
Be a great time.
It will be a fun ass time.
Fun ass time. So, folks, until next week, have a great rest of your day. Have a great rest of your week. We will see you on Monday, October 16th, for episode number 53.
See ya.
Look at that necklace around Sapphire's neck. Did you see that? Wow. Check out that necklace. I gotta find out who's sending her that stuff. Well, you know that Rhodes didn't buy that for her. I mean, who would waste that kind of money on her? Well, that's a gorgeous looking necklace there, McMahon. There's a lot of diamonds in that.
Why would anyone send expensive gifts to Sapphire?
Maybe get a little better look at that necklace, Jeff. The only problem with looking at the necklace is you gotta look at what's wearing it. Sapphire getting down. That's a pretty necklace, I tell you that.